Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, how's the Joker, baby?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 291. Almost to 300. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trobollins. Middle of the week episode. We got New Mutants. We're going to finally review it and talk about the New Mutants. Also, best movies that start with the letter B. We're just going to go down the alphabet. More importantly, though, I will say, great day to talk trailers. Mandalorian trailer came out. Surprise drop, though we knew it was imminent. Trial of the Chicago 7. And then the Christmas Chronicles 2, which I know that's the one that really got Trill going. That was the one that...
What was the...
really excited.
That's the one I didn't watch.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think you did watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't watch the trailer either. So you guys are going to have to bring me up to speed on that Christmas Chronicles.
No, we'll sell you on it. We're going to see what you think.
Yeah. Is it wasn't that a Netflix movie?
Yeah.
Christmas Chronicles?
It's not good.
All right. Well, we got an entire segment dedicated to it today.
Yeah.
We sure do.
And I'm sure Ken Jack and I remember a lot about the original.
The only thing I remember about it is disliking it a lot.
Was it the one with Kurt Russell?
Yes.
Yeah, and then Goldie Hawn shows up at the end. That's kind of like the whole movie was really just a setup to have the two of them on screen together.
So, yeah, you know, you're like a 47-year-old dad to a 12-year-old, and you're like, they're married in real life. Like, that's that's the payoff for them if they're watching the movie.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get to all that in a minute, but what's anything special off the top you want to get into?
I had to go down a few levels in difficulty in PGA Tour.
Because
I was playing some friends online, and they play at amateur, and it was not fun because I was just shanking shots left and right. I'm pro. Had to stoop down to their level.
All right. I mean, we still haven't played. I don't play much though. I play one round a night.
You're never on, dude. You're always working. Yeah, you're always like, you're always making trivia questions or editing video or editing the podcast.
What I was doing
before this. Or. You know, taking pictures of your dog wearing costumes and sending it to us.
It's not true. That's slander. That's slander. No, but yeah, it's a really fucking hard. It's a hard game. And like, I've gotten decent at it. Not good, decent. And I was like 3 under yesterday and I went to a hole. This is the Barstool has a society. So it's just a tour you can play. You play a tournament tonight. It's really fun.
It's the golf version of a clan.
Like the people who win shoot like 28 under, and then our entire office, someone will be like, I shot 2 under, and everyone celebrates that person. But I drove it through the fairway into like a cement area. It's like a fenced in area. And then I was like, I think I can get over this. I didn't. It ricocheted back, then rolled down and wedged into the fence. And then I was stubborn and decided to try to hit out, and it just ricocheted and did it again. And then I turned off the fucking system and I quit.
Incredible game.
I've rage quit. That's the most I've ever rage quit a sports game in probably 10 years. Maybe more, maybe ever. Angry rage quits.
The noticeable thing that's missing from this game is a restart course button.
Yes.
Like it, so not only does it make you quit, but then when you quit, it saves your progress. So you have to like withdraw from the event entirely, which I guess is fine in the context of my player. But if you're just playing by yourself and you fuck up on the first hole, you want a breakfast ball. You know, you just want to restart course. You got to hit that first shot off the tee.
It's a fucked game. Yeah, I thought MLB The Show was hard. This is a fucked game.
MLB The Show at least is like a great game, whereas this PGA Tour is it's a fried Oreo. It's not, you know, it's not as good as it should be, but it still is all right.
Fried Oreos are always a thing that just they do sound fun, and then you get them, and I'm like, just a small bite, please.
Then you eat three and have immediate diarrhea.
Yeah, you're like,
it just runs out through your system.
I can't eat anything fried anymore unless it's breaded in almond flour or something that isn't wheat.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
No, but yeah, that game's all right. What else? Like, what's going on with you guys?
Nothing. Nothing. Work. Not seeing movies.
Yeah, that's.
We were trying to pick one, and I'm like, I want to do a new movie, but we could do an old one. But they're like, well, we may as well talk New Mutants. I really want movies back. I can't go in New York. Like, I had to go to New Jersey to see Tenet. Like, I had to travel to see it. Like, Manhattan, like, I could, if I really want a popcorn, I can go use the AMCA list, go see a shitty movie and just be like, whatever, I'll just kick back. It's effort to see a movie now. So, yeah.
And I'm assuming you don't spend $1,200 a month for the privilege of keeping a car in the city either.
Yeah, no, I've decided against that. Yeah. It's not worth the effort.
Yeah, must be weird and
effort.
I just can't imagine. Like I've lived inside of a very medium to small sized city, but I've never lived in a big city. I've never lived in a city that has mass transit that is anything other than buses. Okay, so the idea of just not worrying about a car at all times seems very liberating to me. Like even though I like driving a lot, I actively enjoy driving. To not have to worry about a car seems pretty nice.
Dumb is a good word to use. Sometimes convenient. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? This is super convenient living in this city. And then there's other times where I hate it.
I hate commute driving, so it's a huge plus in my opinion. I only like driving for errands and road trips, and everything else can kick rocks. So it's a big plus for me.
Living in New York's just—we've talked about it before. It's—I can't believe you guys are in New York. Sometimes I think
it's suffocating.
Well, I'm in New Jersey, so it makes sense.
Well,
I'm just like you. I'm right next to you, man.
You're technically right, which is the best kind of right.
Good Futurama reference.
Yeah, it's one of the three I know. Shit. Jurassic Bark, great episode, dude.
Fuck,
talk about that one all the time.
Every time I rewatch Futurama, I skip that one. I can't do it. I refuse. It just doesn't match the vibe of the show. I won't do it.
Jeff, is there a concoction of sorts we're going to discuss today? Is that further on down the episode, or do we want to
Mountain Dew?
Yeah,
we're going to talk the Mountain Dew thing. We'll talk about it now.
Yes,
the Dew Garita.
Fantastic!
It looks delicious. Okay, hold on. Okay, so let me describe what it is, and then I'll tell you where it's being sold. Because that's the most shocking part. I think the where is what really blew me away. Here's the tweet. It's big, it's green, and it tastes even more incredible than it looks. Hope introducing so. The new Dew Garita. And it's a margarita it's just Mountain Dew, I think.
I found you, Miss Dew Garita.
It has salt around the glass. It looks like Mountain Dew in a margarita glass.
It's a margarita without the things that make a margarita good.
Yeah. Get yours today.
It's tequila in it.
Along with all your favorite PepsiCo drinks at Red Lobster.
Can you remind me what my other PepsiCo favorite drinks are outside of Mountain Dew? Because that's a very short list. Gatorade? Maybe Gatorade.
What's the Pepsi Freestyle? Pepsi? No one knows. The Pepsi Spire? Get the fuck out of here. Ugh.
That sounds, I mean, that honestly sounds like some like dystopian. Do you guys ever play like SimCity 2000?
Of course.
Do you remember the Arcologies?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You just brought a fucking brain blast back.
The Pepsi Spire sounds like some dystopian arcology where everything has like a corporate sponsor. Mm-hmm. There's a Pepsi Spire, is this 2.5 million person ecosystem. Pepsi, but yeah, you know,
they have Sobe Life Water, a thing that we all love. So
wait, shouldn't touch it. Pepsi Diet Pepsi Mountain Dew and Sobe Life Water, is that it?
No,
they get energy.
What's the root beer?
Okay,
is
mug, root beer
Tropicana.
Mug, Tropicana.
7
does,
Up.
Does Mug have two G's?
They got kind of a stranglehold on the citrus, lime citrus soda market. They got 7 Up and Sierra Mist.
See, this is a bad website because Coca-Cola Freestyle, they essentially give you the interface online. Like the Pepsi Spire, I don't see what's here. Like this is a failure. It's not on their site.
I've never seen a Pepsi Spire in person, though. So maybe it's not really a...
I've never seen a Spire. I've seen a Pepsi machine. I've never seen it since they called it a Spire. I mean, that's just...
There's a YouTube preview of the Spire 2.0.
Tropicana Twister Soda? What the fuck is that?
I mean, that actually sounds orange juice from a Spire?
I mean, that sounds... is it real orange juice or is it orange drink?
It's true, Tropicana. I mean, I'm going to
tweet out
this
no context photo of Jay Farrow using a Spire.
Pepsi Spire. Hmm. See, I mean, I get the Coca-Cola brand name for the remix because, the remix implies like a personalization or the ability to take bits and pieces of something and make it your own. Whereas the Spire is like an imposing evil presence thrust upon you. So I guess it does work pretty well.
Well, wait, can we go back to the yep. Dude, Rita?
Yeah. Oh, we can go back to anything you want, baby.
Okay.
Oh, I found the best brand name for a drink though is Splendrift. That makes me want to drink the drink.
Dude, I get Splendrift deliveries ordered here, like no joke. Four different, I think at this point, monthly deliveries. Great it's name. Amazing.
It's a great name. Makes me want to drink
It's not Splendrift. It's Spindrift.
Spindrift. Sorry. Okay, Jeff.
It's amazing. It's literally like water with like just a dash of lemon juice. It's delicious. I drink like three of them a day.
So the Dugarita is not a real product. I mean, it's a real product in the sense that you can get it, but it's not I don't think it's a product meant to be taken seriously. I think it's a product meant to get buzz for a restaurant like Red Lobster to put in your mind that Red Lobster is still there and still open for online ordering and carryout.
I'll be honest, I didn't even know that Red Lobster is allowed to serve alcohol.
And now Red Lobster, Red Lobster is just a regular sit-down chain.
I've never seen them have, like, I think it's the Red Lobster, at least the only one I ever went to is one on Long Island. I've never even knew that they served it.
I think so. There is tequila. This is an alcoholic. Yeah. So it's just tequila and Mountain Dew. But they're also going to have this is the exclusive part of the exclusive deal. They're now going to sell bubbly sparkling water, Life Water, and Tropicana drinks at Red Lobster. So if you're looking for a nice glass of OJ with your bottomless shrimp,
can I get a Coke?
That says no.
Can I get like a drink instead of Aperol? It's made with Code Red. Just a Code Red spritz.
An Aperol spritz.
Do you think it's a real product, Jeff? Like, because I think this was probably very effective in getting attention. But I mean, what do you pair with Mountain Dew at Red Lobster anyway?
If Taco Bell would have sold this, I would have said yes. But because it's Red Lobster, I say it's a gimmick. It's a gimmick. It's a complete like a full gimmick. Like not like, oh, double down. This is a gimmick. We're going to bring it back a lot because people liked it. Like, this is a gimmick as in it's an attention seeker. Only.
Yeah, but I think it's a good gimmick. I think it works.
Yeah.
It's something.
We tweeted about it. We're talking about it.
Well, but I like it. I enjoy it. Like, there are much worse. Like, we were talking about the Travis Scott thing last week. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, well, I said, like, I thought that was probably a very successful thing. I still, like, kind of enjoy the tongue-in-cheekness of the Dugarita. I feel like as cheeky as the British people would say.
What about a strawberry daiquiri made with Code Red? That would actually be good, I think.
I don't know if I've ever had a daiquiri.
Oh, I'm lying.
I've had one on Bourbon Street.
They are delicious.
And those big tourist cups.
Truly marching down Bourbon Street like the guys in Project Power yelling, "Hooday, hooday!"
And just walking down Bourbon Street with my Cat in the Hat. Jamiroquai top hat on and my big funnel cup or whatever they're called from What's the big thing? Hurricane. It's like hurricane.
The hurricanes. Yeah. Right?
I thought there was like a chain bar there, like a touristy place. You know, Cafe Dumont is the place to go get beignets and milk coffee, which are delicious. But that's kind of the.
I think it's. I don't know New Orleans that well, but I'm pretty sure it's. I want to say it's Pat O'Brien's. That might be wrong. That might be a Chicago fucking. That now sounds like a Chicago St. Patrick's Day thing.
Didn't yeah. Isn't that the guy who hosted Inside Edition?
No, that's fucking no. He also did basketball for a while. Is it Pat? It is Pat O'Brien. No. Yeah, that's Pat O'Brien. Yeah,
that's his bar.
Come to Cheesecake Factory. Our new thing is we make a Bloody Mary with Code Red. It's delicious.
Pat O'Brien used to be a CBS NFL guy. And then he's the Inside Edition guy. People forget that.
Those like nighttime syndicated tabloid shows or whatever they were. Just the fact that John Tesh is a musician in its own right, it's always just really fucked up to me.
Yeah. But I like you said that in such a dark way. It's so fucked up.
You think you can dip your Cheddar Bay biscuits into the Dugarita?
Yeah, I think they probably allow that.
Dunkington?
This episode brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes fantastic clothes for at home, outside of home. And now, if you're working at home, you don't want to have to change every time you got to go to the store, every time you got to go somewhere. Mack Weldon allows you to do that. They have fantastic shirts, fantastic socks, fantastic pants. Hoodies are great. And it's officially, at least in New York, it's hoodie season. Hoodie and sweatshirt and short season. One of the best to see. Great comfort, consistent fit, fits well, doesn't run too big, too small, and great quality, doesn't fall apart. They have dry knit, warm knit, air knit, all the knits keep you cool, keep you warm, depending on what you need. And Weldon Blue, their new loyalty program, gets you free shipping for life when you sign up. And once you reach level 2 by spending $200, you get 20% off every order. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like the first pair of underwear, you can keep them. And they'll still refund you. No questions asked. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/lights. MackWeldon.com/lights. 20% off your first order. I'm telling you, they great stuff. Shirts are so fucking comfortable. If you love a good, like, plain shirt, Mack Weldon. Feels like silk, but it's not. It's great. It's good stuff. Mandalorian Season 2 trailer dropped today. It had seemed imminent. Because there have been some teases, there have been some leaks that seem like coordinated leaks. And then this morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, bang, they just dropped it out there. It's got 2.5 million views on YouTube already. Unannounced. They're not trying to jam Star Wars down people's throats. Not Monday Night Football, not big announcements. I think that's what this probably makes. I thought they might do Monday Night Football, but this seems to be the way they're doing it. I thought the trailer was fucking badass as hell. Saw a lot of Baby Yoda. Saw some Banthas looking as... practical effect as ever. It's like the most practical effect Bantha of all time. We see some Gamorreans like in an MMA fight.
That's funny.
It looks fucking awesome. The X-Wings. I am so fired up for the show to come back. October 30th. Trill, what did you think of the trailer?
I liked it because it's staying true to Mandalorian, which is the promise of world building rather than character building. Now, I mean, I think character building's fine, but you know, like the main character, the Mandalorian, like that, they'll keep developing him. But I think one of the things you really liked about the first season is that there's this entire world around him that was infinitely more fascinating than the character himself. And the world was Tatooine. We've already seen it before. Like they made Tatooine seem like a place we hadn't been to nine separate times over nine separate movies. I think they're staying true to that formula and expanding it. And, you know, not only does it interest me in that way, it looks great. It looks, you know, they're just, you know, well, they know how to cut trailers, but I think that this obviously, as the flagship Star Wars product for the time being, until they decide, you know, what they're going to do with the next movies, or at least announce them, I think there's probably a lot of expectations for it. But for me, like watching it kind of delivered on that and made me excited for it.
I think the only thing I'm like kind of not maybe hesitant towards is, but I'm a little anxious about it, is the one thing I loved about Mandalorian is that it runs around the periphery of the Star Wars stories, I would say. Like, it's like we always kind of beg for. We want stories outside of the universe of the trilogies and stuff like that. And this is obviously, now that you're looping in Jedi and shit like that, you're going to now, you know, approach that zone a little more heavily. Like, that event horizon of now dipping really heavily into, you know, more lore of the Star Wars stuff. So as long as they, I think, maintain that balance, right, of, like, showing us, keeping us intrigued with new shit as opposed to trying to pull nostalgia heartstrings or anything else like that, I think we're going to be good. But you do also know, though, that, like, you know, Boba Fett's going to be in the season, Ahsoka's going to be in the season, other people from Clone Wars are going to be in this season. I think as long as the balance is right, this should be like a fucking smash hit, like the amazing sophomore effort. But I am also a little bit anxious about that.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee that it's going to be great. Like, I think because they're adding so many characters and so many things that will take it potentially out of where it was before. I agree. I have a reserved feeling it's going to be hard to top that. And it's going to be hard to top the surprises. There's countless surprises. You didn't know what to expect. But I think, as you probably agree, there's a trust level still, though, too, where I do think this will be good.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing to think about is, like, what, you know, going inside Star Wars, our favorite thing to do, but the meta game on, like, Star Wars and you know, how people talk about it is, you know, in the sense of, like, where they're at as a franchise and who's leading it and who's developing it and what it means for Disney. And I think there's probably a lot of production or pressure on this production right now because, like I said, it's not only carrying Star Wars for the time being, or at least, like, the mainline Star Wars vehicle. It's also the Disney's got to be looking at this as, like, pretty much, like, the prime seller for, I mean, it is the original content for Disney Plus. Like, this is it. Like, I know there are other stuff being, like, made, but there's no other show. There's no other reason to return to Disney Plus if you're, you know, 27 and not interested in Disney movies itself. And especially, like, you know, they're going to launch the Marvel related shows, and I think that will change. But I still think, like, this is kind of a pivotal piece of production for them. And it's interesting to think about, like, the season one is probably done. Like, there are a lot of people excited for it, but the crown jewel of that empire obviously was still the movies. And now it's not anymore. So there's gotta be more hands in the pie if you're Favreau or Filoni, and it's probably different stakes. I think that thinking about it that way is kind of interesting, but from a consumer, just give me the slop.
Mm-hmm. All of the
feed slop. Us
all of it.
Give me the slop.
I'm so fucking
put it in my mouth.
Pumped. Cool tradition waking up early on Friday watching it too. Can't wait. Mm-hmm.
Did you see where the Boys is getting review bombed because people were mad?
Yeah.
Big mad online. You probably wrote like a blog about it or whatever.
It's
right?
Fucking, it's so absurd. It's not even worth talking about. Just people are dumb fucking moron piglets. Like you said, too hungry for the slop.
That's being too hungry for said slop.
I like the motto. Like I said,
me too.
Especially now post COVID, I like having that cadence. You give me something to believe in and look forward to.
Exactly.
We'll talk more Mandalorian as it comes out. No need to speculate yet. I kind of don't want to speculate. Like, I would want to, like, just speculate as the show comes out. But we will. There'll be another trailer. We'll talk about it. Maybe. There may not be another trailer.
You got
we're almost a month away, so there will be TV spots, but yeah, not a full, probably maybe not a full trailer. I don't know.
Can I play a clip from the trailer real quick?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, of course.
All right, so I'm setting it up, and this dark, shadowy figure walks out, right? And he reveals himself. So I'm gonna play the audio for it right now.
Okay.
Those are the footsteps. What? You thought it was gonna be Baby Yoda, didn't you? I've gotten super into, based on Kenjack's impression of it, I've gotten super into, like, making decisions and listing two things and then going with the third and saying, you thought it was going to be something else, didn't you, while turning to the camera.
The other, we at work, we have things, stool streams, we stream like basically drinking game type stuff with Jenga, but PR, our good friend PFT, he is a sideline reporter, and he had a suit, and his suit was all peaches. The suit was peaches, and I made the comment, I said, I said, you look like a plot point from the House of Cards. And then he did a voice for like 5 minutes. So if anyone listened to our podcast on that day and then turned that on, they were like, are you fucking kidding me? This is the most House of Cards talk that has ever existed between two separate shows.
Oh, also correction. Apparently, I've been reading on the Reddit. Apparently, the peach is in Gaffney, South Carolina. I was wrong there. Didn't know where the gigantic peach was.
This is where you turn the camera and you say, I knew that already. I wanted better engagement on the Reddit.
Well, stir the pot.
But I knew where the peach was.
Stir a big old pot of jambalaya. That's not even regional to South Carolina.
The cat may chase the mouse, but what the cat doesn't know is that the dog's right behind him. And right behind the dog is a wolf.
That sounds like something he would say in the show.
You didn't get this analogy. Hey, what if he was at the end of The Departed? Oh, you thought it wasn't going to be a rat, didn't you?
It makes sense.
I'm done. I'm pumping.
The trial of the Chicago 7. Based on the story of the Chicago 7, a group of seven defendants charged by the federal government with conspiracy in 1969-1970, inciting the riot and other charges related to anti-Vietnam War and countercultural protests that took place in Chicago, Illinois, on the occasion of the 1968 Democratic National Convention. This is a packed, packed movie. Yahya Abdul-Mateen, Sacha Baron Cohen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Michael Keaton, Frank Langella, John Carroll Lynch, Eddie Redmayne. Very close to playing somebody in the 21st century, but not quite.
Almost.
30 years, 40 years off, not quite.
Wait, when did Jupiter Ascending take place? So technically, he took place, because I think that's supposed to be in the future, right? And he was in that, so.
Yeah, that was in the future, yeah. He doesn't take, he never does the present day.
Exactly.
Mark Rylance, Jeremy Strong, William Hurt. This movie, Jeremy Sumpter, I don't remember that fucking name. 15 years. This movie... written and directed by Aaron Sorkin. So a lot of dialogue. I actually thought the trailer was just whatever. And I think part of that is probably because there's probably endless dialogue in this movie. It's hard to cut a trailer. I'm sure it's good. We'll wait. We'll see. This is a movie where I don't really care if I see the trailer. I'm going to want to watch it anyway. But I'm not going to say I was blown away by the trailer though, even though I was a big Sorkin guy, minus that dumpy gas bag show, The Newsroom.
You're right. I didn't have much thoughts on it because you don't really know exactly what you're going to get, but it's Sorkin, so you do kind of know what you're going to get. Like, you come for the Sorkinness of it. And so I'm excited for that. Like, if you compare it to like something like the Social Network, I think, right? Even though that was like not directed by Sorkin. I don't think it had as much intrigue, but again, like I think the Social Network at least had the benefit of like writing off of, here's the untold story of Facebook. Whereas like the Chicago 7 is, we have a half of a century of history to look back and kind of reflect on that. And to a lot of people, they don't know much about it, myself included. They just have a high level view of it. So I think it'll be good from that standpoint, but some movies just don't. You can't talk about the trailer in the same way you would of like Candyman or something like that, where it makes you feel something like deep down inside. You just, the only thing to say is I'm looking forward to it and it looks good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'm probably a little drained. I just think of political talk in general and watching this. I was just like, I need more from this, from Sorkin, to make me excited for a very heavily politically inclined show. Or movie, rather, and I don't know. I feel drained from this sort of content. You know what I mean? I don't know how to explain it.
You're on an internet message board saying, like, gosh, like, can't we keep politics out of Aaron Sorkin?
They famously apolitical, Aaron Sorkin, bending over for Lib Hollywood yet again.
Yeah, I'm I'm looking forward to this, and there's a better than... I don't know how to say that. There's a decent chance I'll like it, right? Because like I like most everything he does, but I'm not gonna pretend this trailer blew me away. I would be very game for a powerhouse Sacha Baron Cohen performance, though.
Yes, me too.
That'd be fucking awesome.
And a redemption for our boy GGL after Project Power. I wonder if he's gonna wear a Steve Gleason jersey in this one.
Yeah. I don't think he liked this too much, though.
So. I don't think he needed the redemption. I'm going to say he was bamboozled by Project Power.
he teased it pretty well to us what it was.
Yeah, he's like, those are some movies that are popcorn movies. Hey, guess what? It's not a popcorn movie. I watched it at home on Netflix.
We bring him back on just for you to say that. Hey, by the way, buddy.
Hey, asshole.
Hey, sport.
You misteased it.
You were
Why'd you wear a Steve Gleason movie, though? Steve Gleason jersey the whole movie, dick. You don't sound like you're from New Orleans.
That's a trial of the Chicago 7. And lastly, for trailers at least, The Christmas Chronicles 2. You remember The Christmas Chronicles?
I don't.
I'm just imagining him in that movie now in Project Power, just wearing a fucking like cabbie hat. And he's like, yeah, this is Drew Brees from the Super Bowl parade.
It's Brian Arakpo from
just in case you didn't know, I'm from New Orleans.
Christmas Chronicle 1 was a movie about Christmas, and the second one is it's about Christmas again, it seems.
It's a Chronicle of Christmases, to be fair. They didn't fucking mislead you with the name.
Was Kurt Russell's wig and beard color that different in the first one?
I remember it being very, I would say, gray-white at the very least.
It seems as though he was like, just let's go. Let's just film, please.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get on with
it. Wait, so does he look more aged or de-aged because of it?
The hair looks less touched up and the beard looks very gray.
It was touch of gray, I would say at least, but definitely whiter.
What was the
first one?
What was the plot of the first one? What was his thing? He's Santa, right? Like what was his dilemma?
Fuck.
It was it all takes place in Chicago, and there's what's his name? Kurt Russell is Santa Claus. I think was Mrs. Claus Goldie Hawn. I forget.
Yeah, but you don't see her till the end.
Yeah. Okay. So the only thing I remember is that, and that there was a kid or two involved, and that I didn't like it. And there was a police officer that was played by a comedic actor that I really like, and I was like, why is he in this movie?
Was Goldie Hawn's character kept at the bottom of the ocean in a pain box, continuously killing her like the old guard?
Like in the old guard, yeah.
And she just showed up looking for revenge on Santa.
Exactly. I didn't hate Christmas Chronicles, but like I don't need another one. I gave it like a 70 something.
Yeah, we talked about it before. Like Christmas movies have their own bar to clear. It is what it is. It's not fair, but it is what it is.
There was a couple references I remember hating. You gave it a 42. You fucking hated this movie.
Didn't you say there was a fake news like joke?
There was a fake news. That's what it was. How the fuck do you remember that and we don't? That's crazy.
Because I remember Kathy Durant and.
Someone said to him something like, it was like a Christmas rumor or something. Like, yeah, I heard Santa Claus isn't real. And he's like, that's a bunch of fake news. And
every Wednesday, I asked Jeff what movie we're watching this week. And I can't remember that, but I can remember you guys bitching about the fake news joke in Christmas Chronicles 2018.
He does say it. He does say the thing. I don't know. It's just a teaser. I just felt like we had to talk about it. Sure.
Well, is Netflix going to lay down a hand of cards with Christmas movies? Because that seems like their MO lately. They come equipped with 3 to 4 movies now.
And then
they
Disney
do.
Plus drops fucking what was the movie with what's
Noel.
Her name? Noel.
That was a bad
man,
movie.
That one stunk. That one was a stinker.
Remember Last Christmas?
One of the best endings of all of 2019 in any movie. It was incredible.
Yeah. What was it? It was the singing scene, right? There was a twist that he was a ghost or a figment of her imagination.
Let's not do any spoilers whatsoever here. If you haven't watched Last Christmas, watch it. It's worth it for the ending alone.
It follows the plot quite literally from the Wham or George Michael Last Christmas song. Where Last Christmas I gave you my heart and literally she got a heart transplant from him. That's the hook of the movie. That's it.
I enjoy saying no spoilers.
I think I spoiled it.
There's better news on the horizon anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you have to say is, do you know the song and the album? Yes. Okay, that's the movie.
You win.
That's the movie. Plain and simple. What else? Anything else before I go into another ad read?
Do the ad read.
Oh, let's do it.
King.
Okay, I'll do the ad read. This episode brought to you in part by CBDMD. CBDMD, they've been fantastic, not just for this show, but for the dozen as well. Doesn't matter if you're a desk person like Trill, if you're a rover like myself and Kenjack, whatever the fuck that means. I don't think we're desk people. If you're an athlete, you got to recover. You got to recover, and CBDMD can help you do that. They have an amazing duo of topical products that help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you support where you need it most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our audience 25% off your next order when you use the promo code LIGHTS at checkout. Once again, at CBDMD.com, promo code LIGHTS for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD, gummies, tinctures, and more. Two quick pieces of the news. Jonathan Majors, cast as Kang the Conqueror in Ant-Man 3. I don't know much about Kang the Conqueror. I know that he's heavily involved with time travel, and believed to be a descendant of Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Yep.
He's a time traveler, a supervillain. Obviously, I think at first glance, I was reading his powers on Wikipedia, right? And I was like, there's no way Ant-Man can go against this guy. He's got like a super suit. He's time traveler. He's all this like other like mega intelligence, all this shit. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, no, it's not just Ant-Man. He obviously has the Wasp, but he also has, it was a Janet Van Dyne, right?
Yeah,
The Wasp mom.
And Michael Douglas. Wasp.
And I'm just going to discount Michael Douglas. No offense to Michael Douglas. But Janet Van Dyne has the powers from the quantum realm that she used to heal Ghost. And Ghost, I think, is going to come back at some point, right? Because they let her live, I think, very deliberately. Like, she's going to come back into the MCU at some point. Like, there's no way they just let that slide event over time. So I think they're going to have a big crew going against this guy. And I love Jonathan Majors. Dude's on a fucking tear. So
yeah, good for him. So he was originally Nathaniel Richards. And then becomes Kang. I could be wrong. I don't fucking know. But that's kind of that's what I like about when Marvel introduces new characters. I can go down deep rabbit. I'll be going down a deep rabbit hole on this character. But I do know that time travel is a major part of it, and I like that. I like how much that Endgame has opened up in these universes. I just hope we get to see the content soon. But I think it's a cool casting. I'm in. It's a cool looking character too.
When are we getting another hit of Doctor Strange?
Everything's pushed back.
Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, but I feel like Ant-Man's getting a lot of and look, I love Paul Rudd. Don't get me wrong. But Ant-Man got like a sequel already. And now we're getting another Ant-Man movie, and we haven't gotten that Doctor Strange movie.
There's some charm, I think, to the smaller scale superheroes, like no pun intended to Ant-Man, but like there's some charm to those guys, right? Where like the scales aren't as massive as they have to be with someone like fucking Doctor Strange, whose first literal movie, like he was trying to defeat a world ender. That was his opening movie. Yeah. It's easier to do small scale plots than world ending shit.
We will get it before before the new Ant-Man, though, because Ant-Man is part of that group of Blade, Guardians 3, maybe Deadpool, and then the Fantastic Four and X-Men shit. It's not locked in, because what the lock in right now is Black Widow, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Legend of the... By the way, we were like supposed to be getting ready for Eternals. So that's crazy. Yeah. Black Widow, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Spider-Man sequel, Thor, Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. That's not till March 2022. Then Black Panther 2, though you have to assume that may get delayed. Captain Marvel after that. And then everything else falls in, not locked into anything yet.
All right, got it. Well, that makes sense. There's a rhyme and reason, I guess. I think on its face, like just with the actors involved, like Ant-Man's probably a bigger draw than Doctor Strange. Maybe.
Possibly, yeah. I think a new insane Doctor Strange following these new Disney Plus shows could end up being opening up some new fans for these things and like hyping up. I think people like Doctor Strange in Infinity War and Endgame, and now they're like, well, fuck, which is kind of what you're saying. Like, let's get more of them. We liked him more here than we did in maybe his actual movie. So, and lastly, this is just for Ken Jack.
The one item I was going to pass on for you.
Happy
guys.
Death Day 3 won't take place on the same day, apparently.
It's fucking sick, man. It's going to make another $100 million to a Blumhouse machine, and now DNF it.
It's going to be the day after.
We're not up against a really difficult clock right now. The other movies were hard because they were set in the same exact day, so everybody had to look the same, be the same. The pressure is off there. Happy Death Day to Us is the working title for the film.
You guys have to be sick of these movies too now, right?
Oh, I don't. If you offer me a crisp $100 bill and the chance to see this movie, or like something at like a bowl of ice cream, I think I'm gonna take the bowl of ice cream.
Oh yeah, I didn't want Happy Death Day too. I didn't even want that.
And yeah, I don't like Happy Death Day.
Stupid.
I don't like. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to Happy Death Day.
And talking about how hard it is because characters got to look the same. Is that much harder? I'm not saying it isn't. I just feel like they do that a lot anyway for takes and having to redo reshoots and whatever. And it's not, you know, I don't know. Like maybe unless you're like bleeding and you got to have like the same prosthetics or makeup applied. What is it? You're just putting on a J. Crew sweater and getting your hair styled? I don't know. I'm oversimplifying.
And stuff like that. Getting just body changing and stuff like that.
Was it going to be like Boyhood where it's just filmed over 10 years?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Imagine if they did that, they'd invested that much into it.
What do you think it's going to be called? They got to have a pun name, right?
They just said, right?
That's the working title. That's the working title. Right.
Happy Death Day to Us.
Yeah, that's the working title, so it'll be something likely different.
But it's got to be Happy Death Day 3 Geldman. Because her name's Tree Geldman. It's 3 Geldman.
Happy Death Day 3-Day Weekend, and it's just a repeating 3 days.
Happy Death Day Polly.
Well, they're just going to go and save. They're going to stop Stallone from removing Polly from Rocky IV.
Yeah, it's Stallone removing the robot triggers Tree Geldman repeating the same day over and over.
Tree. Who fucking... I can't talk about that.
Your character name was Teresa.
I know. I'm aware. Okay, but who decided... Who was like, my name is Teresa. I'd rather be called Tree. I know it's a nickname that people use, but who? Why would you do that?
I've never met a single person named Tree.
I've never met a single person under the age of 40 named Teresa.
I have, not to brag.
For that matter. I mean, it's crazy to see if, whatever. I'm not talking about Happy Death Day anymore. I refuse.
Big rest in peace to Mother Teresa.
No, she got canceled too, don't forget.
Did she?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh shit.
Do some digging on that. Very interesting cat, some would say.
I take back my words and remain neutral.
I remain neutral on Mother Teresa.
I don't have a stance on Mother Teresa until I Wikipedia research for the controversy section.
The tab, yes.
I wonder out of every Wikipedia article, like what percentage the personal life and controversy section is like the most clicked on out of like all of them. It's got
to
be.
It has to be. It's. I would say too, if there's like a way to track it, that's always the first one clicked. Like out of all the tabs, and then the people work their way back up.
Like, yeah, if I'm looking up David Boreanaz, I want to see who he's been dating.
Exactly.
I don't care that he went to Juilliard. I don't give a shit.
He did go to Juilliard. That's right.
I don't know that.
I don't know if that's right. I think I remember that from the David Boreanaz Hamilton song.
What if David Boreanaz did go to Juilliard, Jeff?
I know he left. He was from Buffalo and then lived Possible. On his sister's couch in LA for like a year or something. I remember that much from the song.
No, he went to Ithaca College.
Same sort of vibe. Very similar vibes.
At Yale, we call Ithaca College Cornell.
Let's do New Mutants.
Oh, boy. Here we go. New Mutants. Been wanting to talk about this for a long time. Just released not that long ago. We were able to finally screen the thing. Shout out to the person, you know who you are. 5 Teenage Mutants, Mirage. I'm not going to read them all. Undergo treatments at a secret institution that will cure them of their dangerous powers. They're invited to share their stories. Their memories soon turn into terrifying realities as they start to question why they're being held and who's trying to destroy them. Directed by Josh Boone, who's done a lot of YA movies, including The Fault in Our Stars. most notably. We interviewed him, had a good time with him. Again, came out a few weeks ago to not very great reception from audiences or critics. 33% from the audiences, 54% from 33% from critics, 54% from the audiences. I was rooting hard for this movie. I was giving it the old route. Let's go. Be a good movie. It's just not. It picks up. There was a moment in probably the first third of the movie where I really, by the way, spoiler alert, where I really thought I was going to just really dislike this. And then it kind of picks up a little bit. I'd say back half, back third of the movie. I don't think it's a complete fucking disaster. I think it's, I liked it better than Dark Phoenix. It's not really saying a ton. I liked it better than Dark Phoenix, and I'd probably go as far to say I liked it better than Apocalypse too. Actually, I definitely
better than Apocalypse. That's easy.
Yeah, I liked it better than both those movies. I still didn't love it. I'd give it a 65. I think it's very passable. I think there's some things that they do that I enjoyed, but for the most part, it's bland at times and bare. It's bare bones. It feels, wasn't there something recently, Trill, that you compared to and you said it's like, oh, this should be a Netflix like short or like a long show or something?
Yeah, I forget what it was, but yeah, there was something.
That's what this felt like. This felt like a long form Netflix YA movie.
Yeah. Well,
long form series.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, like the problem with Netflix is like every Netflix show that runs for 10 episodes, like, well, I guess that's not what you're talking about, but I'll relate it to that. It feels like they just didn't have enough to make a full movie out of this. I don't know. It didn't feel fleshed out in a way that felt satisfying. I'm having a hard time thinking about what it reminded me of, but we always talk about like Soul, and we always talk about like, you know, if a movie has soul and it has heart and has characters, it typically means it has the characters that you either relate with or despise, but in a good way. Or, you know, you're sympathetic to their plight or whatever. And I think this movie tried to get you to be sympathetic to the characters. Like, I feel like that's the angle like it went at. But ultimately, I don't think they were fleshed out or interesting enough for you to connect or resonate with them. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the big issue with this movie is you don't. There's nothing to latch onto as a viewer. You feel like you're watching a video game cutscene, in the sense that it just doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel up to the quality that you'd be used to from some of these comic book movies. And not that the comic book movies are Clockwork Orange or, you know, high art cinema or whatever, but I, you know, and this one was in development hell to put the least. So like how much of that was because of recuts or how much of that was because of reshoots or whatever, I'll never know. I think there probably was a reason they did all that. And I'm going to be willing to bet that they made it a better movie than it actually was and tried to do a salvage job. And I give it a 45. Like I'm lower than Jeff. Cause I honestly think this is a little worse than an average movie. I don't think it has a specific reason for existing, but at the same time, I don't think it's as, I think it has more of an excuse than something like X-Men Apocalypse does, where mm-hmm. that being a mainline X-Men movie with built-in characters you already are rooting for and you like, and coming off the heels of other movies in the franchise, which have been pretty good to okay, like at least with the rebooted cast. That's more of a disappointment than New Mutants to me, because at least with New Mutants, you knew something was fucked up there.
Mm-hmm. I think there are a couple of avenues the movie tried to take, and there's obviously the expectation of it being a comic book movie, but it's basically like coming of age blended with horror, and I think that can work well. Like you see it in stuff like even like The Witch with Anya Taylor-Joy, like Carrie, it, other movies like they, well, it's been done and it's been made to work before. I just don't think the balance was found correctly, and I think it's for a few reasons. And one is because I don't think the cast had a particularly strong chemistry. Anya Taylor-Joy is probably the strongest performance out of all of them, but I don't feel like any of them, and like they're supposed to be like a ragtag group that doesn't get along, but it looks like they off screen just do not get along, which is what I think people said was happening behind the scenes too, but that's another story. And I just don't think there was enough time for us to build that connection that's necessary for a team up movie, like you were saying, Trill, which killed a lot of opportunities to build empathy with them. And another huge issue is just the script, because the dialogue is so weak in this, it's really bad. And I think they made the performances that were already not so strong look even worse. So that was also kind of frustrating. And I think at the end, I was just more than anything else disappointed because, you know, like I personally didn't read anything about the heroes involved in this or their powers or anything because I wanted to experience them for the first time in this movie. I wanted to find out with everyone else, like, what this is all about. And the way I think, I don't think any of them were handled particularly well, but one in particular, in retrospect, is really disappointing. And that's Danny Moonstar, because it's kind of a letdown, especially considering how great Mysterio was in Far From Home. Because the ability to, like, fuck with your opponent using illusions, like, that's a very interesting thing to me. And, like, the way that was done with Mysterio in Far From Home, to me, was awesome. And, like, that's the bar. And the way it was done with Danny Moonstar in this movie, this was, like, nothing. It was so inert. It's just a letdown more than anything else. I think the movie just tried to do too much.
Character is what I think people were, at least myself, hoping for. And I think you guys said, like, it was there to be a character piece, kind of, or a character study with, not character study. It was a character movie, right? It was more character driven and personal, and but it didn't have enough there, like you said. It wasn't fleshed out enough, and that's, I think, where it failed to connect. Because I think the nuts and bolts were there for it to be interesting and different, and it felt different and not like schlocky in a bad way, like some of the other X-Men movies. Just because it tries that doesn't mean it works perfectly or works well. And I think that's where it fails, because unfortunately it just doesn't give you enough from those characters. And it feels thin and, like I said, bland. Like, it just, there are times where it just feels kind of empty. Like it's like almost like it's there's something that they didn't get to do, right? Like, it's almost like it's missing something. Yeah. I almost feel like this is like the setup. That's why I compared to the Netflix thing. I feel like it's almost like a setup for more, but it's obviously not. It's a movie.
It was supposed to be a trilogy, I think, right, when they first started this. So that might also be part of the problem.
And I think maybe that's where, like, you know, there are concepts that, just because it's a comic book property, it doesn't mean you have to take it to a movie. You know, we've talked about, like, what's successful on television, and I think you can get away with being, here's what I think about television. Like, yeah, like it's a medium that has done really well in terms of, like, developing a whole new prestige television, quote unquote, like, subgenre of the thing. But you still kind of put cinema above television in terms of the prestige, and with that comes the expectations. And I think something like this, like, would have translated well from that, just from a standpoint of one, like, fleshing the characters out and getting it started. Because when you start with new comic book characters, now I think you are starting on the 5-yard line. Right. You know, with the existing characters, you have built in characterizations. You already know about them. Like, you know about Peter Parker. They do, like, a little bit of origin story, and then it's time to move on. That's why we don't want any more origin stories. But with this, not only from, like, developing the character standpoint, like, I think it would have benefited from a longer runway that a TV series could provide. I also think I would have had, like, much lower expectations with it, because, you know, if fair or not, like, when this comes out, you're like, if they're going to make a movie out of it, you know, you're going to expect that there's going to be a halfway decent story with, like, decent motivations for the characters, and it just wasn't there. That's what it was missing. And that's, you know, a lot of bad movies are missing that. It's not unique in that standpoint. It's not, you know, all by itself, but it just is what it is.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the origin stories thing, because it does feel almost as if each character in this movie got their own X-Men Wolverine origins moment, like the 2-3 minute flashback scene. Each one of them got their little origin story, and, like, even a little more ambiguity to it might have, I think, even made it better. You know, like, you're all stuck in this, like, a position almost like a Saw. It was like fucking the Saw intro or something, but then everything had, like, just was so exposition heavy after that, and that all the dialogue between each character in an attempt to make them kind of build them as characters was just so heavy-handed. Ugh. It's just
And I think that was kind of my issue with Harley Quinn as well, but I thought Harley Quinn did it better, because at least coming out of Harley Quinn, there were, you know, two or three characters of that in group that, like, I enjoyed. Whereas with this, like, you know, I don't know. Like, I like Josh Boone, and I listened to the interview you guys did, and you know, it's always tough when you're on the show. It's like, admittedly, you have to walk that fine line between having someone you on and then having someone on and, like, you know, telling them you're looking forward to their movie, then getting their movie a 45. It just is what it is. And I'm not trying to shit all over that. But the issue is, like, it's a movie. There's a lot that can go wrong, and it's disappointing because in your heart of hearts, you kind of wanted them to fucking come out the gate and like deliver at least like a 75 and surprise you and be like, holy shit, this movie made it despite all the odds. Mm-hmm. And it really is just like, you know, it's kind of like the running back who tears his ACL and you're like, you hope, well, maybe he comes back 2 years later, like Adrian Peterson, and does a good job again. But more than likely, he's going to be like Edgerrin James, where he's just a facsimile of their former self. And so those will exist, but they're the exception. And I think this movie, you know, it kind of was what it was, what we thought it was going to be.
Great quote.
Yeah, another well football done. Reference.
That was a well done football reference is tied in there.
Back to back.
The funny thing about this is, though, I don't like know what else to say about the movie. Like, this is not original thought. I heard people talk about some of the accents and stuff. I thought some of those
the fucking Charlie Heaton accent. What the hell was that, tough. Man? But that was just a fail.
There's just not much to go on. It's like it's really, again, I'll use the term bare bones. Like it feels like there's just not a full movie here. It feels like the first part of a smaller series. It's just weird.
It does feel like a pilot episode.
Which shocks me even more that it wasn't dropped on a streaming platform. And I don't mean Disney Plus, because I know the rules didn't allow that, but that there wasn't a different plan put in place for it. That's what kind of surprised me. That was like my biggest takeaway.
But I think this was a canary in the coal mine to see whether, you know, you put the canary in there, if it drops dead and starts choking on carbon monoxide. And I think it kind of was that for the theaters, where they're just trying to like heat check what like a lower tier movie was going to do with some of these reopenings. And why not? Like, this movie, they could have gone either way. It could have been canceled. You might as well get some use out of it. So for me, it seems like a good data collection experiment for where we're at from a public's willingness to venture into the theater to see a movie that isn't Tenet or Black Widow or something like that.
The answer would be no.
Yeah, no. It'd be that. No. And what was the Russell Crowe one, Unhinged?
Fuck the same thing with. Well, we're going to be reviewing Greenland soon, so.
Hell yeah.
Greenland.
Back to our good boy, Russell. Why did I say Russell? That's not his name. Gerard Butler.
Russell Butler.
The big question.
Gerard Russell.
The big question to me, though, is you know, I still think there's a lot to think about surrounding this movie, both from like its release and you know, the current market environment, and certainly the theater business has been one of the hardest hit industries. I mean, every industry has been hard hit, but theaters, just by nature of a bunch of people packing into a space and laughing and opening their mouths and eating, is something that I think people want to avoid that right now. But the other thing I'm thinking about is like, we've talked about the Star Wars saturation point and the superhero oversaturation point, and how beneficial I think it ultimately will be that Marvel's getting this cooling off time, so people get a chance to reset themselves.
Yeah.
But I mean, you almost got to wonder if like all the studios got together and said like, how do you balance out like having a limited runway for, I've been saying that a lot lately, for like the audience's willingness to watch superhero movies, because at some point like it'll just be out of style. People won't really be into them anymore, with oversaturating it and almost like price fixing the market on like the number of allocated superhero movies a year. Or at least like Sony, if you're gonna make a superhero movie, or if you guys are gonna release this, make it good. Now keep in mind, there's only two companies doing this right now, so that probably will never happen. But I think this is one of the things where this is a movie to like be easily like sit back and be like, I'm fucking, we are making too many superhero movies, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. I think it's our friend of the pod, Brandon Davis, tweeted, there's a possibility we may just not get a Marvel movie this year for the first time since like 2009, which is like insane to think about, but that cooling off period is going to be kind of important, I think. And what I would want, the one thing this movie has made me want more than anything else, is to eventually see a documentary about the making of this movie, because so many factors have gone into it across so many different issues, like not even just the Fox and Disney merger and all the problems that have to do with that, the research that Fox had forced Boone to do, and then there's also COVID and the release timing and all this shit. There's so many different factors going into the release of this movie that I would just love to see just the behind the scenes of everything that went into this.
No, you're right. I it certainly, it could go one or two ways, where the truth could be super boring or the truth could be super interesting. I'm going to line on the side that the conditions for making this movie like you're saying, just with the interconnectedness of a giant merger and being a property that was swapped off, and also like being COVID, you know, hit, I think that nobody benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good, man.
No, it was not. Certainly was not. Certainly was not. Yeah, I don't.
The other thing too.
47.
Okay.
Is I do think they were making this trying to get it out to capitalize on the Maisie Williams hype. Not that there's that much, you know, like Maisie Williams, fine. And she's, you know, she's not like A-list or anything like that. But I do think there was for a while up into that lead off of the final season, like the last 2 to 3 seasons of Game of Thrones was as huge as that the show ever was. And I think anyone even related to that show was kind of hot at the time. They're on a little bit of a hot streak and a hot name that you want to attach your other properties to.
You're absolutely right.
So the fact that that didn't happen, like, I think that's another thing where, like, yeah, if you get Maisie Williams to lead your movie, like, obviously I think you're banking on, like, Game of Thrones putting butts in those seats. Like, that's a familiarization to an actor in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think they would have wanted to market her as, like, one of the main stars of this movie, because there really wasn't, I would say, a huge main star other than Anya Taylor-Joy. And I think maybe they wanted that, and then after Thrones flopped a little bit and there was 2 years of cooling off, it's just, there's not the same hype around it.
Yep. 54 average score, 58 for the audience, 65 for me, 45 for Ken Jack, or for Trail, 47 for Ken Jack. That's the scores for New Mutants. We move on from New Mutants. We lay New Mutants down and we say goodbye.
Good night.
It's forever. It's been a long run.
3 year saga.
Let's do movies. Let's start.
You thought I was gone, didn't you?
Oh no. He's just in
New Mutants.
Yeah.
I was the big bear all along.
You see, you got to change your fly trap or else you're just not going to catch any flies.
That was a weaker analogy of Frank Underwood's. I like the other one better.
It makes you think.
It didn't make me think at all.
No, it makes you think. Why would you have to change your fly trap? Is there something I'm missing here?
Yeah. Best movies that start with the letter B. We got to do the randomizer again. We got to do the randomizer again. The random lotto machine.
See if we get the same thing that you typed in again.
Yeah, that did not do me any favors. I liked my list though last time. Here we go. We have Trill, Ken Jack, Jeff. Audience typing it in, they can see it. Randomize. It goes myself, Trill, audience, Ken Jack.
No Blade Runner for me.
All right, I pick. Ooh, though this is tough. So it goes me, Trill, audience, Ken Jack. I got to go Back to the Future. It's my second favorite movie of all time. It's 100 out of 100 for me. That's a tough pick because I'm leaving a lot on the board here, but I do have to go with Back to the Future. Number one, my number 7 ranked movie of all time. Trill.
For movies, I'm going with B movie. It's the ultimate B movie.
For movies, true.
That start with B.
Barry B. Benson.
Barry B. Benson.
That's your first pick.
That's my first pick is B movie. Correct.
Audience number one. Any guesses?
It's Bad Santa, because they want to cuck you.
No. It's Beauty and the Beast.
Babe, Pig in the City.
Interesting.
Back to the Future was number one for the audience. Ken Jack.
All right. I'm going to go back-to-back Blade Runner 2049, very specifically, and Stew Blazing Saddles.
Oh. That's good. That's a good back-to-back.
The best comedies ever made.
That's a very, very strong first two picks. I think it's a very top. The B's are top heavy.
Yeah.
The B's are very top heavy here. Audience number two is Black Panther.
Okay.
Black Panther. Trill, you're up next at number two.
I'm gonna go with Boogie Nights.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I love Boogie Nights. I think Boogie Nights is one of the most fascinating movies of all time, too. Because it sits at the intersection of many people's careers.
Mm-hmm. That's true, actually, yeah. I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg's starting, It's fucking, what's his name? Who's the manager?
God damn it. Reynolds.
Was it? No, who am I thinking of? That was Greg Kinnear. Greg Kinnear played the guy. Greg Kinnear was like that. They had that cool long take scene where he murders his wife. That was awesome. That was insane.
Yeah.
Not the killing his wife part. Just the scene was very cool.
We had Don Cheadle, like Heather Graham, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, keep in mind.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, that's what I was thinking.
It was released in 97. Yeah, but and also a great movie too. But I think it's also a very important movie.
It's a very interesting movie. I think very underrated. I guess underrated is the right word.
Great stories from behind the scenes there.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff. I'm gonna go back to
the dick wasn't a prosthetic. It was
real.
It was my dick.
Can I pause and read you a celebrity synonym from our radio show today? And yes. See if you get it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Ken Jack already knows it. Ken Jack already knows it. All right, Trill, here it is.
Okay, give it to me.
Oh, it's so fucking stupid. a Rush Hour star who hopes they serve beer in hell and has a big move.
Oh, Chris Tucker. Big move?
Yeah.
Oh, was that the Frankie Muniz movie?
Close enough.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know the last part.
It's Chris Tucker, Max.
Tucker Max.
Keeble, yeah. Max, bro.
I got the first two parts. I hope you serve beer in hell. It's one of the worst movies ever made.
And the sequel. You hear about the sequel? There's what was it called again? Shit.
Oh, fuck. I gotta pull on.
It was like, oh, god damn it. It was something so stupid. It was like, don't foam my beer, bro, or something like that.
It may as well have been that. Fuck, what was it? Tucker Max books.
Oh, it was like Assholes Win or something like that, right?
Yeah, Assholes like, Finish First. Finish First, yeah. And then he had a second book. He had, he has another one, Belligerence and Debauchery, the Tucker Max stories. Then he has Hilarity Ensues and then Sloppy Seconds, the Tucker Max Leftovers.
I love the day where you could just write like, and then I dumped a beer on those turd waffle shit gobbler motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
Just write like that and people are like, this dude's good at blogging.
Yeah, man. This guy can write.
This guy can really. This guy strings together the most cuss words.
This guy can scribe. Mm-hmm. I'm going The Big Short and Bad Santa back to back. Big Short has slowly become one of my favorite movies of all time. Fucking amazing stuff from Adam McKay. Ryan Gosling's probably his best performance, in my opinion. He's amazing in it. And then Bad Santa is another easy top 10 movie for me, favorite-wise. And that's my number one Christmas movie, Bad Santa. It's people sometimes say it's too dark. I agree, but that's kind of why I love it. Trill, number around three, B movie.
I would go with The Breakfast Club.
Mm.
Yeah, Breakfast Club, I love The Breakfast Club. I love all the John Hughes movies, but there's something special about The Breakfast Club for me because I love that Chicago suburb 80s vibe that John Hughes put out, and it comes through stronger in The Breakfast Club than any of the movies, and especially in the design of that high school. It's just so fucking interesting and something that wouldn't be built anymore. I don't know, the brutalist style of that library. I love it, man.
Breakfast Club for Trill. Audience pick Big Lebowski next. Back-to-back picks for Ken Jack, round three and four.
I'm going to go with... I'm just trying to think of which order I want to do. Let's go Borat.
Oh, I wasn't even on my short list. That's a misfire.
Another great comedy movie. Don't want Birdman. I'm trying to think of like movies I need on this list, like for sure. And you guys got most of them, which is kind of one of the more frustrating parts about this. This is actually really far down my list here, but I'll say Braveheart.
I really love Braveheart. That's a good pick, though. You're going to get the votes. Audience pick Birdman in round four. Trill.
I'm going to go with The Godfather. classic Marlon Brando movie of all time?
The Bodfather. That sounds like a Tucker Max book. Or Tucker Max, like exclusive fragrance with Axe.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm going to go Batman Begins.
The Bodfather.
I think you get points for alliteration.
Yeah, I got multiple B's in there.
You said The Bodfather.
Yeah, the Bodfather. The Bodfather Part 2. The Bodfather 3. Nobody really liked that, though.
Goodfellas.
Oh, my God. I'm going to end with The Bourne Identity. The Bourne Identity. My favorite of the three. And then I have a couple on my list. I'm looking at Baby Driver. You know, I was going to say Batman 89. I'm going to go Best in Show.
Oh,
that's a very good movie.
I want another good comedy pick on here. I watched it good recently. Pick. I want another comedy on here.
I'll trade you Batman.
Batman Begins?
Yeah, I'll trade you Batman.
Pass. I'm not a big Batman Begins guy.
But it's got good. It's got two Bs.
It does have two Bs. Like, I like it. It's a good movie, but yeah.
All right, man. Well, you're going to regret that when it's week 14 and you need a comic book movie to fill in for the playoffs.
Are you going to pick a movie?
Oh, is it my turn again?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, hold on. Okay, let me go to my list.
Battlefield Earth, The Boy Next Door, Baby Geniuses, Ballista. Some of the worst movies of all time were B-movies. Baby Geniuses, The Boy Next Door, Battlefield Earth. Who?
Baby's Day Out.
Okay. Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star, and The Bye-Bye Man.
Ugh. Pee-pee-poo-poo, man.
Battleship.
Is that what you're going with?
No. I'm trying to come up with it. Hold on.
You can do original Blade Runner. You can do.
I thought it was only four picks.
When do we ever do four picks?
I don't know, man. My brain's just my brain.
Well, how about Big? Tom Hanks classic.
I do like Big, but hold on. I'm trying to. You know what? I'm gonna do. I'm gonna do Big Daddy.
Oh, okay.
Don't hate that at all.
No, I like that pick a lot. Like that.
You know what? I'm gonna do the Big Sick.
Yes.
Okay, the Big Sick.
Yeah, I like Big Sick more than Big Daddy. Sorry, Adam.
Add audience pick Black Klansman with their last pick.
Solid pick.
Ken Jack, round it out.
I'll round it out with Burning, one of my favorite Korean movies ever made. I
haven't seen it.
It's amazing. You guys got to watch it. It's on Netflix. Very easy access. For those of you familiar with Walking Dead, it's got Steven Yeun in it. Great psychological thriller. And obviously don't watch the dubbed version. Watch the sub version. I didn't even check if there was a dubbed version. If there is one, don't use it.
Burning.
It's fucking awesome. It's great, so good.
Great movie with Bradley Cooper.
Is that the one where he's the cook?
Yeah, Burnt.
Is that the one where he shucks a bunch of clams at the start?
I remember the one where he's a chef. I just forget what happened.
Yeah, it's called Burnt.
Burnt.
Yeah. Left on the list here, he had Boys in the Hood, Blue Velvet, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Blindspotting, Brooklyn, Before Sunrise. Oh, the Before trilogy is amazing, by the way, if you've never seen it. Baby Driver, Being John Malkovich, Blues Brothers, Beasts of No Nation. People are going to eat the Blues Brothers. That's the tweets we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I picked Back to the Future, The Big Short, Bad Santa, Born Identity, Best in Show, Tropic B-Movie first. Boogie Nights, Breakfast Club, Batman Begins, The Big Sick, audience pick Beauty and the Beast, Black Panther, The Big Lebowski, Birdman, Black Klansman, Ken Jeff pick Blade Runner 2049, Blazing Saddles, Borat, and Braveheart. Oh, and Burning. And Burnt. He also got a sixth movie. He got Burnt with Bradley.
Six movies out of it.
He got Burning comes with Burnt for free.
That's a sequel, obviously.
Yeah.
Burning, then Burnt. I don't know what comes before that. Not on Fire.
I got to close out my tab here where I Googled The Bodfather.
Was The Bodfather a thing?
Is that it has to be a scent or something.
Is that a Beachbody course? A Beachbody DVD
That's
series?
That's a Dom Mazzetti video for sure. You ever want to get The Bodfather? I'm your Bodfather. I'm Dom Mazzetti. I'm going to make $5 million for working out and saying shit like douche nozzle.
You come to me on the day I do obliques.
He definitely did that. I will bet you all the money in the world he made some sort of reference to Godfather in that fashion. 100%.
I watched I went to Zootopia the other day and I forgot about the possum.
Yes.
How'd they land on possum other than the fact that like they could give the possum big bushy eyebrows and it would look kind of cool?
It's like the Scorsese fish from Shark Tale.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
See the opportunity, you take it.
Shark Tale had a really good song on the soundtrack called Good Foot that never made its way onto any streaming service.
Really? It's you can't listen to it on any platform?
I don't believe so.
It's only like the what do you call it? The Godzilla soundtrack. They still have a blacked out on Spotify, no?
Yeah.
Oh, just like some... the Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, yeah.
Here, let's see. I'm going to send you.
Want to end the pod on Goodfoot?
Yeah, you should. We should end
the pod with Goodfoot.
It's kind of a banger. It came out in, 2005? It was Justin Timberlake and Timbaland.
Huh.
I just can't get over the fucking shark from Shark Tale. Here, I'm going to send you the YouTube link.
All right, well, on the pod with it. It's playing right now. As you're Ooh. Listening, it's playing right now.
It's amazing. I haven't heard this song in years.
All right, that's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, they're doing an episode by themselves Sunday. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
They can have guests on. They can do whatever they want.
It's going to be called Frank Underwood, and it's just going to be us talking like Frank Underwood for 90 minutes.
Oh, no.
Claire.
If a tree falls in the woods, will you hear it? Welcome to our podcast.
Pull the car around, Meacham.
That's how it starts.
Yeah. Now, if I didn't know any better, I would say this book writer is trying to cuck me.
God, that guy stinks.
Well, joke's on. He turns to the audience and he goes, little does he know, I like that.
I'm into that sort of thing.
That is extremely my shit.
I sent you a way when I just got back into it. There's a lot of random product placement for video games in House of Cards.
Yeah. Because
he plays them. There's a couple. He's like,
Call of Duty, right?
Is that a PSP? Or no, wait, what is it? Wait, no, wait, what's the...
Is that a PS Vita? I love those.
Yeah, that's an
Nobody loves
line.
PS Vita.
That's an actual line. He goes up to Corey Stoll's character, and he goes, Peter, fuck, I just watched the show.
True.
Whatever.
What is it?
He goes... Yeah, Peter what? You know the side characters.
I don't. Peter Murphy?
No.
It's something Irish, though. I think you're right about that.
Fuck. Peter, House of Cards.
Malark.
Peter Russo.
Oh.
And his kid has the play. He's like, is that a PS Vita? And then he's like, it was in your face, obnoxious product placement. He's like, yeah, he has all the games. He loves it. That was...
I'm trying to imagine Frank Underwood presidency at the same time as he was president on the show and him just being at, like, you'd attend the Super Bowl with the 49ers and the Ravens where the lights went out. And you just turn to the camera and be like, little did they know I caused that. You see, Zoe Bonds and
I bet money on
He does
49ers.
It again, too, with a mobile game called Monument Valley where you, like, move all, like, the... He's like
Clash of Clans or something,
literally,
right?
Like, in the middle of, like, a Russia crisis, he's like... He's like Remy and who's the other fucking guy? I'm watching the show. How do I not remember?
Excuse me, is that Sargento string cheese?
He's like, let me tell you a little game, something about Hideo
have y'all played
Kojima.
The game Monument Valley? If you look at it, you'll love it. It's like what are we doing? Who? Why did House of Cards have so much video game product placement? And then he also terribly plays Call of Duty at some point, too.
Yep.
In the,
he operates the controller is like every person that's never played a video game but has to for a movie, where they're just like, they're not even touching the analog sticks. They're just jamming the buttons like crazy. I love that shit.
He gets introduced with Peter Russo. He's like, you're a Mead 5-star guy, too, aren't you?
I gotta find that screenshot. Is that a
How far did you get in Sekiro? Let me know. I can't believe it was really a PS Vita. I made that up because that's the most like hated system.
Now, Mr. Russo, allow me to take you to my favorite lunch spot, Jason's Deli. They've got a salad bar.
I just love me some Roy Rogers.
Not everyone will get that reference, but I get it.
Jason's Deli? I thought Jason's Deli was nationwide.
Maybe I didn't know what you're talking about.
I love Jason's Deli.
Yeah, Jason's Deli is delicious.
Hi, I'm Jason. Welcome to my deli.
They have fake ice cream. They have like the frozen yogurt, but it's like also not.
Yeah, but that's the best kind of soft serve.
Yeah, no, I know. Oh, here we go.
Goodfoot's been playing for the entire duration of the song, by the way.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
I'm gonna send the picture. I'm gonna tweet it out. But here's Frank Underwood saying, "Is that a PS Vita?"
Oh my God, it is. Why did fucking Corey Stoll have a PS Vita?
His kid had it.
Why did his kid have a PS Vita? They stink.
Unbelievable.
That kid doesn't read Game Inquirer.
Nobody would say a PS. Like, Vita. It would be PlayStation Vita, right? Like, would you say PS Vita?
Yeah, no. And also, and then he ends up fucking, actual Frank Underwood, we're not going to say his name, he ends up in an actual Call of Duty game after this. After this,
he does.
Whichever one that was, like Black Ops, it wasn't one of the Advanced Warfare, maybe, I think.
One now, of those ones. I need you to press the F button to pay respects.
It was that game. That little, was the game that meme comes from.
Little did he know the F button had already been pressed by me.
F button secretly means no respect.
All right, that's it. Ken, Jack, and Trob, Jeff, I'll talk to you next time.
Where can we get the box off? Now, how am I supposed to know that she's sure she ain't got no ring on her finger? It ain't our fault, homeboy, that your girl likes to wonder and linger. You're acting so serious, we just dance, I ain't even asked for her number. Don't be mad cause we the life of the party, we ain't really trying to hurt nobody, talk to him. I'm not being cocky, I just noticed that she was looking at me. Chill, homeboy, be cool, cause there ain't no reason for all that fussing. Just getting started, and there's a lot of fish around here just shaking their jelly. I ain't trying to be rude, dude, but we trying to tear up the place. Come on. Ooh. Ain't nothing to it. If you wanna get down, then we can do it, do it. Ain't nothing to it. Get out your seat while you ain't glued to it. Be busy and watch that tone. Keep stepping with your new suede shoes on. Boys and girls, let's all sing along. Everybody just get on the good foot.
Just get on the good foot. Yeah, girl. Get on the good foot.